everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, Thomas Henderson, and we have a special guest this week from Baseball Prospectus, Jared Seidler. Guys, it is draft night. The draft is currently in progress. The Mets have made their selections. It's late. What's going on?
I'm watching the draft stream muted because I don't particularly want to listen to Harold Reynolds talk about guys he's learning the name of for the first time while comping them to Ken Griffey Jr. and or other players. I'm pretty sure they were flashing clips of Ken Griffey next to like Chase DeLauder. So,
I mean, I see it.
I'm like, all right. Okay, guys, let's I like Chase DeLauder. Let's pop the brakes a little bit.
They made a cross-racial comp. I'm impressed.
Oh, true.
You know, now that you say it, it might have actually been for Collier instead. Clearly, I'm not paying any attention to what these people have to say. Anyway, right, so, thanks for tuning in to listen to what a bunch of schmucks have to say.
I mean, we have some weight now, so our schmucky opinions matter.
Four schmucks and Jared.
Oh, I'm definitely a schmuck. Most people would call me a bigger schmuck than you guys. The ESPN broadcast actually hasn't been bad. Like it has some focus and production problems, but at least everybody on the stage knows what they're talking about, which is
Yeah, I'd rather that. Like right. I'll trade that.
Yeah, I really like Kyle Peterson as an analyst. You know, I really like Eduardo Perez as an analyst.
Yeah, Perez is good.
Kyle McDaniel certainly knows all these guys better than pretty much anybody. You know, it's been a decent broadcast. I also have it muted so I can join this podcast. Yeah, the Mets floated a top 3 to 5 player to 11, which is also what they tried to do last year and also why they have the 11th pick this year. So let's hope they have his medicals this time.
Let's not even get into that.
Yeah, but Ken Prado was largely expected to go, I think, either third or fifth to either the Rangers, who in fact took Kumar Rocker at number 3, and a pick I don't think anybody saw coming, or to the Nationals at 5, who took Elijah Green, who was another guy that was rumored to have some Mets interest on a float, and they floated Parada down. I certainly imagine he was their guy. I certainly imagine that's going to be a significantly overslot signing. He is a draft-eligible sophomore. He's one of the younger players in the class in the college ranks.
Right? They better have their ducks in a row here, because if they don't sign Parada, no comp pick this time.
The comp pick, they still get a comp pick next year, but then next year pick would be unprotected. Yes, they changed that.
Get
the pick for 2 years. I would certainly strongly suspect that they already have an overslot deal there. And I don't think Jet Williams is going to be tremendously underslot at 14. He was a guy, Jet Williams has been connected to the Mets for 3 months. They've been all over him. I know Thomas is not a particularly big fan. I love Jet Williams. I think he's one of the 5 or 6 best players in this draft.
I don't see the ceiling. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But like the ceiling for me is where I'm a little confused. Like I get the floor and the tools and all that stuff. And I think he's an exciting player. It's just he's so tiny that I don't know where the power is going to come from, but there's players who hit home runs, you know?
I've laid this out kind of where my paradigm has shifted into evaluating hitting prospects recently, and it's ability to make consistent contact and it's quality of contact, and he rates incredibly high on contact metrics for a prep hitter, and he makes really good contact. Like, he actually does hit the ball hard.
He has a really nice swing, too, like, visually.
I mean, we've been seeing those comments on Twitter for, I don't know, months at this point that, oh, yeah, Williams has some nice exit velos for a high school hitter, et cetera, and, you know, not that we've seen the full data because, again, we're just a couple schmucks, but that's certainly something that I'm excited for.
And he's listed at 5'8". He's not 5'8". If you're listed at 5'8", you're not 5'8". We all know that. If this kid was 6'1", 6'2", he's basically right-handed Jackson Holiday in terms of skill set, right? Mm-hmm. So and yeah. Jackson Holiday was the first overall pick. He's going in the top 2, 3, 4 picks if he's a little bit taller. And I know there's been some speculation within the industry that maybe we've overcorrected on small hitters that because there are still some physical disadvantages just in being able to like generate bat speed without arm length and stuff like that. But this height really, height doesn't matter, measure hard.
Oh my God.
There's certainly been a plethora of good smaller hitters that have hit for power. You look at Ozzie Albies, who kind of has a similar type of frame, and he certainly has had no problem hitting for power, and he didn't even have any kind of real power projection as a prospect. He started hitting for power in the majors.
I would say Altuve has 19 home runs this year, or something like that.
Jose Altuve is such a weird guy to comp ever. You go a little further back, Dustin Pedroia. These guys all hit for substantial power. And I don't really see any reason why Williams can't, other than the vagaries of drafting an 18-year-old who's been playing against Texas prep competition. But you look at the analytics that he had on the showcase circuit, they were really good. The two guys in this draft, and the Mets were connected to both of them, and were Zach Neto and Jet Williams, that had like the really strong combination of contact and how hard they hit the ball, but had something wrong. Neto had a weird swing, and Williams is 5'6" probably.
Yeah, I'd say that. I'd say about
so. I think the Mets made out great here. I am fantastic. We are recording this in between the picks. I am fantastically curious what they do with their next two picks tonight, because they could go in one of two directions. They're either blowing the draft pool, in which case I didn't just call my shot with the strategy, but pick the right team, and you're never going to hear the end of it from me.
That's going to be insufferable forever, Jared.
Yeah. Or they're cutting, in which case, you might see somebody like Ben Joyce here who's going to take like a six-figure bonus in the second round. Or they might do what they did with like the Matt Allen draft, where they continue to make picks as long as they can and then start signing like $5,000 guys later on. But I definitely think you're going to, if they, float, two of like Brock Porter, Noah Schultz, and Walter Ford to their next two picks, they're obviously blowing. They can't sign everybody at that point. And I personally would like that for my own personal interest, but also it would be very good for the Mets farm system too. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially when they dump everyone for Soto in 2 weeks. So
yeah, that's probably not happening, but sure. Let's run with that.
All right. So draft started out pretty normal. Jackson Holiday went number one. That's fine. Drew Jones went number two, also fine. With the third pick overall, the Texas Rangers selected Kumar Rocker. Whoa.
I'm going to get yelled at by Jarrett here, I think. But I think this is a stupid pick.
Oh, no, I can. Oh. This is, yeah, no, Kumar Rocker should not have been the third pick in this draft. Come on. I'm really glad for this kid. It sounds like he's going to get like a $5 to $6 million bonus, which is considerably under slot. It's considerably under slot for the pick. The Texas Rangers, with the third overall pick, with kind of the talent level they have, of course they should be taking a bigger swing than this. This is like a major league ready mid rotation starter.
I think the injury concerns are still real though, right? Like we only saw four starts in a whatever league, and that's not enough for me to buy that whatever was wrong is fixed. And of course we don't have the medicals or anything, and I'm not defending the Mets process last year at all, but it's the Rangers,
I think he was a first round talent, but at three, like a huge stretch. There's plenty of people on the board who you could have taken who are major league ready ish and still like just higher ceiling and more, just makes more sense at three, you know?
So in terms of talent, when they drafted, there's probably like 8 or 9 guys a dick before Rocker.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can make the argument he was the best college pitcher. And if you're really set on taking a college pitcher for some reason,
mm-hmm.
I guess you can make that argument. But, like, again, I do not hold the Texas Rangers front office in particularly high esteem at this point. I think John Daniels has basically stayed the same as the rest of the league has passed him by over the course of 12 years now or whatever it's been, which took him from a point where at one point he was very far ahead, and now he's pretty far behind. And
I mean, I think they as a team have demonstrably acted as if they think they're better than they are, and teams should absolutely spend money, but they spent $300 million on Corey Seager and another $180 on Marcus Semien just so they could win like 70 games, right? Their farm is, they do not have the pieces in place to be pushing to win now necessarily, and it feels like they're drafting Rocker so they can get that pitcher up there real quick. So, like, that's the only argument for it.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect him to be taking rotation turns in August. And
Yep.
You don't draft for need in the MLB draft. You see, with the Mets, they just, you know, the Mets have one of the two best prospects in baseball, and he's a catcher, and they just floated another catcher to 11. Like, you know.
You figure that shit out. Is, for lack of a better term, you draft for the best player who's there, and then you figure out whatever you need to figure out later. There's DH now. There's plenty of things you could do with both of them. Who says you can't have two?
Particularly given Alvarez's skill set, like having another, like, full. You can get his bat in the lineup as a DH. I don't know. I think particularly given the limitations of Alvarez's game, the idea of a Parada Alvarez tandem sounds pretty amazing.
Sure. Yeah, like if all goes well and Alvarez catches 2 or 3 times a week and DHs the rest of them, and Parada unit catches the rest of them, and then you carry like a Tomas Nito like third catcher because you don't need a DH. You know what I mean? Like, you could get creative with your roster if everything works out the way that you think it is. Or
I know he hasn't played other positions, but I think athletically Parada would have a chance to play positions like third base or the outfield as secondary positions, whereas Alvarez is like just obviously not. Alvarez, I think, would be stretched at first base. But I think Parada has a chance to play like non-DH positions if it gets to that point, you know, like
kind of Wilson Contreras is Contreras like.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like call like a Dalton Varsho level of versatility or speed, because he's not like that fast or athletic, but I don't think he's necessarily a guy that can't play somewhere else, even if he lacks experience there.
I mean, even at the very least, he has the height for first, which Alvarez does not.
Yes, but he's got some, you know, I think he's got some athleticism and some flex to him if it comes down to it. But, you know, the Mets could also trade one of these guys at some point. One of them could not pan out. Prospects don't always pan out like you hope. So, you know, I think we have a fairly high degree of confidence in Francisco Alvarez is going to hit for power as a major leaguer. I'm sure everybody on this podcast does. But you never know. You know, we also had that level of confidence about Jesus Montero 12 years ago. So
now that's a name.
Yeah.
All right, so the next couple of picks were realistic, you know, nothing, no stretches of the imagination there. With the 7th pick, the Cubs went with Cade Horton, who had some helium coming in, but I don't think anyone really saw him necessarily as a top 10 guy.
I don't get this. I mean, it's obviously a cut, but I still don't get it.
He's interesting to me because I think this is a product of where the draft takes place now in the timeline of the league. Like, he clearly got the helium because of his late season performance, you know, like the College World Series and everything else. And it's pretty interesting that we are getting that for the first time, you know, like normally we get, it's the opposite where we're watching the guys, the team picks after the fact in the College World Series or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty interesting to me. like just that this it happened immediately. The first year that the draft got pushed back, there was a guy who lit the world on fire for a tournament, and here we are.
Yeah, I just want to make my pitch in here. Like, literally everybody that works in or around baseball absolutely hates this and wants them to move the draft back to where it used to be. Like, teams can't adequately prepare for the trade deadline.
Oh, no, it sucks. Yeah.
The amateur scouts are split between scouting the 23 guys and remaining 22 guys, and then their trade deadline pro coverage. You know, it's not well located for anything other than the ESPN broadcast, I think. But yeah, Horton was I wasn't that. So a lot of teams looked like they took shaves in this area. You know, the Rockies at 10 with Gabriel Hughes, I'm guessing, is probably a shave too. The more teams do that, the less valuable it is, because the more teams, like, if you're the Rockies and you shaved with Gabriel Hughes and then, like, four teams in front of you shaved too, you're having a much harder time getting your guy to the second round. They have a comp A pick, so it's not quite as difficult for them. But, you know, the more the more teams do that, the less beneficial it is to do that. So it's like a weird, like, non-cooperative game theory problem almost. I don't know what the Cubs are doing. I don't know what the Cubs are good at and bad at anymore. They seem, you know, we were talking about the Texas Rangers being a directionless franchise. I think the Cubs at this point sure look like a directionless franchise too.
After this weekend's series of games, it sure looked that way. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So, so Cubs went with Horton a couple of picks later. The Rockies at 10 went with Hughes. And now with the pick number 11, there were a bunch of different ways that the Mets could have gone. There were a bunch of pretty good players still left on the board. And the Mets went with Kevin Parada, catcher from Georgia Tech, who, you know, on a lot of places was considered a top five player.
BA had him seven. Six in their final version.
So yeah, the Mets got a pretty solid play here. This is a pretty good hole.
This conversation is disturbingly familiar.
Yeah, I know.
Like, we said the same words almost verbatim last year.
Great job, guys. Now sign him, please.
Please, for the love of God. Or please just take some backup picks. Take some backup picks at least.
I think we'll do that this year.
They can't possibly screw it up the same way. Right?
I mean, they are the Mets.
There might be a college reliever they really like in the 18th round that they just have to take.
Oh, God.
I will say...
hey, don't besmirch Trey McLaughlin's name.
The recent change to the UDFA rules, back to the old UDFA rules, makes it slightly less necessary because they could just use that money in the undrafted free agent pool if they had to. Especially because you can now do the undrafted free agent pool of draft and follows. So I think there's, like, if the Kumar Rocker debacle happened in 2022, even if they hadn't drafted somebody as a backup, they still would have found somewhere to stick the money. So the Mets, I guess, got unfortunate that they did that in the wrong year, but also someone in their draft room should have, like, understood the basic rules and strategy of the Major League Baseball draft. That's generally a good thing to have.
I think in a major league organization.
Yeah, not to rehash things, but it's just such a weird, like, what the hell just happened there? I mean, they've drafted backup guys in the past, years going to the past, like. Just
Hunter Barco was the backup to Matt Allen a few years ago.
Yeah. Tanis just did an oopsie and forgot.
Yeah, like, how do you do that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I do oopsies at my job too, so who am I to
Dear oopsies cost billion-dollar organizations several tens of millions of dollars worth of value?
No, they didn't.
Oh, I see.
I did give the other day, though, like $20,000 in tickets to a place, so I thought that was pretty cool. They did deserve it, though. No oopsies, like legit, so. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I think we were all hoping that Young would get here, and then Parada was here instead. So that's pretty fun. Young went next. I'm sure Ken shed a single tear and then remembered we drafted Kevin Parada.
I'm cool with this.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, like, even if we had our guys that we looked at coming in, like, I didn't even think about Parada because I was like, he's not going to be there. You know, exactly. Like I didn't even consider it a possibility. And then once it got to, like, the Twins and it was kind of getting down there and you could kind of see it happening, I was like, are they really going to be able to pull that one up? Like, did they float someone again and it worked? And, I mean, here we are. And I'm pretty sure at this point, like, there's not really that question. Like, Rocker had the medical question that people talked about, I think, even before the draft. I kind of remember that. It's a while ago. It's a year ago now. But, like, Parada just doesn't have those question marks where, unless they just are cheap for no reason, like, they should be able to sign him. And then at that point, why are you even floating him if you're not going to do, you know what I mean? Like, with the Rocker thing, it was the medicals and the Mets fucked up with that, but that's a different story. Like,
it would be absolute malpractice if they didn't have a number for him at 6 p.m. before they even did all of this.
Exactly.
Like, 100%, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, the last team that actually did this and blew it doing that was Mark Appel the first time he got drafted with the Pirates.
All right.
Where they just, like, they didn't get the number and then they didn't give him the number because they didn't have the number. You know, the vast majority of these deals are done on the clock or done by the time the pick is made, and a small percentage of them, there's kind of some lesser level of understanding. Like, I think it was the case with Khalil Watson last year with the Marlins. But, you know, we don't hear about them until after. But, yeah, I would expect Parada to come in at a significantly above slot bonus. I don't know how high. I have not heard a number yet, but I would expect him to come in with a nice healthy bonus, and I have no idea how or if they're going to pay for it. So.
By our theory casting, 11th pick slot is 4.7, closer to 4.8 million. He was projected to be top five, which is between 6 and 6.5 million. So looking at a $1.5 to $2 million overage here, or maybe $1 to $2 million overage, to set the range a little wider, but cover my ass in case I'm wildly wrong.
Noah Schultz just went off at 26. I believe, although this is on mute, that the ESPN broadcast may have just compared Spencer Jones to Shohei Ohtani.
I didn't see that. Yes, as one does.
Noted top of the rotation starter, Spencer Jones.
I mean, one hand pitch at one point.
On the one hand, we have quite possibly the greatest player of all time, and on the other hand, we have the 24th pick in the draft. Yes, these things are comparable.
Yeah,
especially because, like, the Judge comparison is right there with
that. At least makes a little bit more sense
where he went and his height, and that he's a big, strong boy. You know what I mean?
Well, like, Spencer Jones speaks Japanese, right?
He's left-handed. He can't compare a right-handed
hitter to
a left-handed.
Oh, right, of course.
How dare I?
Jesus.
Oh, God. Another guy that the Mets were supposedly interested in was Spencer Jones. He is a very Yankees pick.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This screams Yankees.
A very Yankees pick. He's either going to be a 2025 MLB All-Star, or he's going to strike out 200 times in high A next year. There's a possibility it's both.
Get somewhere in the middle and get Estevan Florial or something like that. But, I mean, same thing, just two levels higher.
I'm Shireen Ghaffari.
And I'm Alex Heath. We're hosting Land of the Giants, a podcast about the biggest tech companies of our time. This season, Meta, formerly known as Facebook.
it's a company in a particularly controversial and vulnerable moment. Mark Zuckerberg is placing a multi-billion dollar bet towards an imagined metaverse future. Meanwhile, the rest of us are still grappling with what he's already built.
This season, we're going to talk to the executives steering Meta's biggest decisions. And you'll hear from some of Meta's sharpest critics, its former employees.
We'll explore why Zuckerberg is taking the company in a bold direction and how Facebook's past will inform its future.
Land of the Giants, the Facebook Meta Disruption, from Recode, The Verge, and the Vox Media Podcast Network. This season is sponsored by Klaviyo.
Subscribe for free wherever you listen and get our first episode on Wednesday, July 13th.
The Iowa Lottery was out there saying on a regular basis, hey folks, check your ticket, somebody's got $16 million. And it was sort of this mystery, why hasn't anyone come forward?
I'm Phoebe Judge, host of the podcast Criminal. True stories about people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle, told by people who know them best. Like a man who successfully figured out how to negotiate with his father's kidnappers after some trial and error.
They were just like, for that price, we won't even tell you where he's buried.
And a 12-year-old who solved a family mystery.
There were three little fingerprints. And I remember in junior DA camp, I was like, oh, fingerprints. This is definitely some evidence. Then we can find whoever broke into my grandmother's house.
Discover the unexpected side of true crime.
There were no security alarms whatsoever. The file cabinets were not even locked. So that gave us enough information to plan the actual break-in.
Listen to Criminal now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yep. So after Parada was selected, Jace Young was selected by the Detroit Tigers. Zach Neto was selected by Angels. And then at 14, the Mets pick again, and they selected shortstop Jet Williams out of Rockwall Heath High School in Texas. This is a guy that had been connected to the Mets in the past. We talked to him a little bit prior to tonight, and I think we all are in agreement. Pretty solid pick here.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm the low guy on him, and I think he's I don't think he sucks. You know what I mean? Like, he's definitely four in the system and, like, is a talented player, and I see a major league future for him. It's just, I want to watch more of him to see why I don't see the rest of it, but I probably will get there. Like, I'm just using it as a learning experience. It's called personal growth, my friends. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of personal growth, Jet Williams is 5'8".
No, quote, not. Unquote. 5'8". 5'8" in spikes. Maybe.
See, I mean, that really is the biggest knock against him. And we were talking about it earlier, you know, the bias against shorter players. And is it really something that really makes too much of a difference nowadays anyway, with so many shorter players, you know, having become productive and very productive major league players. So, I mean, but you know,
I will say the last draft guy who had this general kind of profile and went eight spots lower than people thought because of his height was Corbin Carroll. You know, you heard the same things about Corbin Carroll that you hear about Jet Williams. And I am actually not particularly high on Corbin Carroll as a prospect. If you've listened to our podcast or read some of the stuff I've written recently, I still think Corbin Carroll's one of the 10 or 15 best prospects in baseball. But, you know, I think there's some potential for Williams to make that kind of jump over the course of the next few years, because if you hit like Corbin Carroll's hit in the minors, people stop caring about your height really quickly.
Yeah.
Also, the way that Carroll's flaw, the not hitting, like, you're not going to be able to really pick that up in high school, I don't think. Right? Like, if you're not hitting breaking balls, and first of all, how many good breaking balls are you seeing in high school? And second of all, if you're not hitting the breaking balls you see in high school, you're not a top prospect anyway, so... Like, yes, there's no way to see that.
Right, Jet Williams had really good zone contact numbers on the showcase scene, so you wouldn't think that's going to be an issue for him. But yeah, that's not something that would manifest until, like, double A anyway, exactly. Most of the time.
I was afraid you were going to go further back and start talking about, like, Forrest Wall or Delino DeShields Jr. and like these other second base outfield types with speed.
Yeah, and I, you know, I don't know where the Mets are going to play Williams. He's worked out as both an infielder and outfielder. I don't know a lot of people who think he's a shortstop. I think most people generally have him either as a second baseman or a center fielder. Maybe there's a few people who have him as third baseman. But I
Third base, really.
I mean, the 60-yard dash time is kind of nutty, so you would think center field would make sense. Now, who knows if he has good reads or whatever, but...
I would not be surprised if he ended up in center field. As Corbin Carroll plays center field. No, this is not a Corbin Carroll Jet Williams comp. It's just, it's a similar player.
All right, so the Mets have drafted Corbin Carroll, everyone. Write it down.
Yes, the Mets drafted Gary Carter and Corbin Carroll.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
Do we think they're between the two first-round picks, do we think they're overslot or underslot?
Oh.
On aggregate.
Over. I mean, Parada is a draft-eligible sophomore, so he does have some leverage that he can go back to school, obviously.
Yeah. I would guess they're probably on aggregate about $1.5 million over. This is a complete guess. I do not actually have inside information on that. I know numbers are leaking out. I looked, I asked a couple people. I did not get any feedback on that. I don't know why that is. The Mets just might. It wouldn't shock me if the Mets were just really tight-lipped about all of this because of what happened last year. if they were planning to ambush everybody by blowing the pool, they would also act in this way. So I don't know. My gut is they're not blowing the pool. I think we would probably know if they were blowing the pool. I also think they probably would have tried to float somebody better than Joe Williams at 14 if they were doing that. Although, again, this organization absolutely loves Jet Williams.
Right.
Outside of guys right at the top of the draft, that was one of the most frequent and strongest connections we'd been hearing going back to like the actual Texas high school baseball season in like March and April. Like the Mets just had tremendous heat on Jet Williams. I mentioned this on Jeffrey and I's podcast, but the Mets historically have almost always drafted the guy that they've had the earliest and heaviest heat on, and that was Jet Williams. So,
Not so good with the discretion there, are they?
I mean, it's hard to not be. There's teams that are there's teams that are very secretive about it. The Mets are not the Baltimore Orioles in terms of their secretness, but they kept the Parada interest. I don't recall. The Mets were connected to a lot of guys with those picks, and if I heard Parada's name, I don't remember it publicly or privately. That was not a player that they were connected with really at all.
Just from the names I remember seeing there, I've seen Crawford, Lauder, Suzak, Young, I'm forgetting some name. Porter. Did I say Porter already? Like
Nato.
He was a big one.
They were connected with floating Elijah Green to that pick.
That seemed a little ambitious.
I don't think it's any more ambitious than floating Parada, to be honest.
I also don't like Elijah Green that much, but.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a top 10 prospect, but he's not the one I would pick in this draft. He's extremely Nats, though, that's for sure.
Oh, very, very.
Do you mean that the Nats like to draft guys that swing and miss at high fastballs and usually can't get them to stop swinging and missing at high fastballs?
Whatever team they assign Green and House to, that BP is going to be a hell of a lot of fun, and then there'll be some weather pattern changes during the game.
Yeah, I mean, not that the Mets are the team to develop that trait.
Oh, no.
Either, also, the weird part about that is all of the teams that would be best at developing that trait out are the same teams that are just not going to draft the guy in the first place.
Right.
because those, you know, like the Dodgers were never, Dodgers are not going to draft Elijah Green. Dodgers are never going to be in a position to draft Elijah Green.
No.
Everybody thinks they're taking that JUCO arm. And, they apparently were not particularly subtle in hiding interest on Jacob something or other, Miser Ruitz or something. Jacob extremely Polish.
Mizuroski? No kidding, yeah, extremely sure. Polish.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, I don't think that the Mets were, it would have been really fun to see Elijah Green in the Mets system. I think Kevin Parada is a much more realistic guy for them to develop into a good major league player.
Yeah, I agree with that. Where do you think they put both of them, assuming they sign them, in the system?
God, put them in, put Parada in Brooklyn so that roster's not so bleary.
Please.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance Parada goes to Brooklyn after, you know, he might do like a stint in the Complex League.
Sure.
I would guess Jets in the Complex League for the rest of the year. I think there's an outside chance he sees low A. You know, like Riley Green saw low A his draft year, so it's not like totally out of the realm of possibility. But there's no Happy League or Penn League to send these guys to anymore, which is bad. There should be. But that kind of makes the assignments a lot easier. Like they're not, you know, if we're doing Brooklyn must win, they're going to send them to high A now. They're not going to send them to short season A. So.
It's at least a semi-appropriate. I mean, that's an appropriate level, honestly, I think, for Parada. Like, putting him in St. Lucie would be an absolute fucking joke. Like,
he would hit, like, fucking 500. Like,
I think there's an argument to get him into pro ball rather lightly. He is a college catcher. Georgia Tech had a long season.
I don't think you even need to have him catch, though. Just, like, let him DH for a month in Brooklyn and then worry about catching through instructs and into next season. But I'm not an expert on developing catchers.
The Mets last drafted, when was the last time the Mets drafted a college position player in the first round? Was it actually Conforto?
Was it Conforto?
Mets draft history.
Yeah, because Conforto, then we had the next year was Justin Dunn and Anthony Kay, then the next year is Peterson, then the next year is Kalanick, then Beatty.
So yeah, we don't, and I mean, their entire player development staff has changed since then. Conforto, they sent to Conforto signed right near the deadline, even though he had a deal done, which is one of the great mysteries of Mets prospect lore that I don't think I'll ever get answered publicly.
if I vaguely remember that, and I think it was comical. What supposedly?
Yes, I think everybody on this podcast knew the reason. Anyway, and then they sent him to Brooklyn for the rest of the season, if I recall.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah. So, again, that level doesn't exist anymore. And if Jeff Wilpon also doesn't exist in their decision-making process anymore, so I don't really think they give a shit whether Brooklyn wins. Am I allowed to curse on this? If not, leave that out.
Michael Conforto went to Brooklyn and hit 331, 403, 448 for 200
players. He was real fun there.
That's some useful experience.
I like really remember like just watching him there and going like, what is this guy doing here? Like when they sent Pete Alonso there, like Pete Alonso like really should have been there. I think I saw a Pete Alonso game. Like I don't remember whether it was with Steve or Kenny, but it was definitely like I think one of you guys. And it was just like, what is he doing? It was like he had a real bad swing at that time. Like he needed to be in short season to adjust to wood bats and pro pitching. I don't think Kevin Parada is going to really need that level. And if you're trying to do that level now, it's the Complex League. And like, there's an argument to put him there for a week or two just to adjust them. But yeah, I would probably try to get him to high A by like August 1st if I could.
Yep. I agree.
I mean, they're playing Lakewood the 23rd to 28th, so he should be there by then.
That would be awful. I really hope so. I don't know. We got Hudson Valley coming in a couple weeks again, which means I get to see Jason Dominguez. That's going to be Jason Dominguez playing close to New York. It's going to be a circus.
After hitting a home run in futures, it's going to be great.
Fantastic.
All right, so, I mean, the draft, it's moving at a snail's pace here. Obviously, we're not going to have time to, you know, we're not staying up to midnight to cover the second round or the second, their free agent compensation pick. So
they're not, they're only doing three picks tonight, right? They're getting to 52, but not,
no, they picked four times today.
They picked four times tonight. Shows how much attention I'm paying.
Yeah. I mean, they're all up to 28. Jesus Christ.
This is going to go until like 1 a.m.
Don't they speed up the clock after a certain amount of picks?
I don't know if they do. Yeah. They're going to do it on the first. Do they?
Oh,
I think
God.
They drop
I think when is ESPN? Like
I think they like stop actually paying attention to every pick on the TV broadcast at some point.
Yeah.
So I think ESPN is going to stop doing after the first round in the comp rounds.
Dorays, and stop me if this is the raziest thing you've ever heard, just took a 240-pound high school first baseman.
Excuse me?
Xavier Isaac.
I know who you're talking. What? Why would they do that?
Dorays, man. Turn them
around. I don't.
He's a Florida commit.
Okay, I was looking actually at the I was gonna ask everyone, like, do you have a favorite non-Met pick in the draft so far? I was trying to look into this guy the Brewers picked, because they've been doing interesting things in the draft recently, but, you know, taking a big, we love our big chonky boys on this podcast, you know, so go Rays.
Mine's gotta be Brandon Barea going in the first, because I thought he was good this whole time.
Yep. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he went to Toronto, so let's not talk about their pitching development. But
let's not talk about Schultz going to the White Sox either.
I know.
I really like Neto at 13. Tweeted that I was hoping the Mets would get him at 11. I think Parada is a better pick than he is, but it's close. Again, you look at a combination of power and contact. Even though the swing is unusual.
I know it's not like the exact same thing, but I got like Trey Sweeney-ish vibes, honestly, like analytic darling with a weird swing. That
I would compare him more, less Trey Sweeney and more, great, I'm going to blank on the name, Colton Cowser, the kid the Orioles took at five.
I also love Colton Cowser.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I love Colton Cowser.
Aren't they teammates?
Yeah. Bowser played for Sam Houston State, and Neto played for Campbell.
Yeah, I thought you were right there, Ken. Honestly,
it's great that I can remember that information at instant recall and can't remember what I had for like breakfast.
Listen, these are the lives that we've chosen. All right, so I mean, obviously, there are so many more picks. And these picks are going to have an impact on, you know, the totality of the draft. But how would you grade what the Mets did tonight with the first round?
A plus.
I mean, it's hard to not say, A, they floated a top five pick to 11, you know, like that's just you're going to get a good grade from that no matter what, really.
Yep.
I would say this is better than you could have reasonably expected them to have done coming into that. So,
Also, big news from Tim Healy is new Mets prospect Jet Williams, the number 14 overall pick, is a Long Islander. He lived in Port Jefferson from 2 to 4 before moving to Texas.
He's a
5 foot kid, 5'6" kid that moved from Long Island to Texas. There's a certain group of Mets fandom that's just going to absolutely love this kid.
We're going to hear about it every time he's at the bat now.
Yes, we're going to – the Jet Williams stand squad is already forming.
The only mild criticism, and I'm not even sure this is a criticism, and also I guess it depends what they're planning to do with the rest of their pool, which we'll find out. Would you have preferred – and this is a question for everyone – Collier, whatever, to Williams?
I don't know how I feel about Collier. I know that sounds like a cop out, but
I particularly am fond of Collier, having followed him all year. So
mm-hmm. yeah, you have. Yeah, that's true.
I think Collier is a slightly better prospect than Williams. I know people that disagree with that. I don't think that's a sure shot either way.
It mostly comes down to prep.
Yeah, it mostly comes down to what traits you're looking for. I mean, look, if you put what Cam Collier's done in a analytic context that's especially focused on like more basic analytic stats and like age relative as opposed to like heavy batted ball data, you know, you're going to come out with the idea that Collier is one of the best draft prospects in like recent memory. He excelled in both the toughest JUCO competition and the Cape Cod League as a young 17-year-old, which is like actually the type of thing that breaks those kinds of draft models.
Right.
Because it's like just something you're not supposed to do. There's some concerns there about like how hard he hits the ball and that kind of stuff. I would probably on balance prefer Collier slightly as a prospect. I think he's probably going to be a little higher on the 101, depending on what they do the rest of their campaigns and what like their fall looks and that kind of stuff is. But, you know, if they're not, Collier is getting a significant overslot bonus from Cincy, since he has extra picks.
Right, right.
You know, I think that bonus is going to be well above $5 million. I think that's going to be around what I think Parada and Collier are probably getting similar size bonuses. If you add that up, the Mets at that point would have either been doing 5 to 6 figure senior signs the rest of the way or blowing the pool. So if they were going to blow the pool, I would have taken Collier, but I still think it's kind of close. If they wanted to just have an overslot first pick and maybe a little bit underslot second pick and then save some money in like the 6th or 10th, they'd take Jet. So.
Mm-hmm. That seems reasonable. I mean, both of them strike me as guys with huge blow-up potential, right? Like, it feels like every year there's a pick in the teens that winds up, I don't know, like a top 50 name or something, so.
And the Mets have infrequently actually went after those guys. They've tended to draft a little more for upside with like their second and third round picks than their first round picks. I think the Mets did a really good job here, at least within the confines of what they're doing. And I don't think Collier would have significantly moved that. If you talk to an amateur draft analyst from certain teams, they will tell you that Collier was the best player in the draft, though. So you can get a dissenting opinion on that if you want.
All right. So, I mean, I think we're all in agreement. Pretty solid haul the Mets got tonight. And, you know, we'll see.
Just don't fuck it up now, please.
Yeah. I mean, we've been here like you alluded to earlier. We've been here in the past, so
they can't keep getting away with it. Sorry, go on, Steven.
All right, so if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElvlaHost343. Ken is at Ken1191. Thomas is at Zed Mets Season, SZN. And Jarrett is at J Seidler. And
J A Seidler.
Oh, excuse me. You're right. Yeah. You're right.
I do not have J Seidler. I signed up for Twitter too late on what is definitely my first account. I have never had previous accounts.
While you're here, you know, obviously, senior prospect evaluator, baseball prospectus from all you kids out there, podcast. Anything else you want to plug while you are here?
Oh, no. those are the main ones. Like, right weekly at BP. I would assume anybody listening to a Mets Prospect podcast probably knows who I am already.
Yes, so, that yeah. Venn diagram is.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah, it's basically just a concentric circle. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so subscribe to the podcast or get your podcast from, rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we'll be back tomorrow night to review the rest of the Mets' first round, the rest of night one of the draft, and then second afternoon, which is picks 3 through 11. So, till then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.